I'm afraid this interview is at an end.
Welcome to another episode of Discover ADN, a podcast featuring conversations with people from all over the world. In this second season of the show, we'll talk to some wonderful people and hear their stories on what inspires them, what decisions have changed their careers, and what relationships have influenced their work. And today, I have the privilege of talking to Randolph West, a person who lives in sunny Canada and is making a transition away from technology and into acting and directing. He's quite well known for his unique wit and sharp sense of humor as well, both on and offline. Today's conversation does get a little Skypey at times, but I think it's going to be a wonderful listen. Do enjoy. Welcome to the show, Randolph.
Thank you for inviting me, Jason.
You are running a consulting firm in Canada. When did you start?
The consulting firm was founded in July 2012 because we were moving from Lloydminster to Calgary and I needed to do something in Alberta to keep myself occupied. I always told my husband when we came to Canada that I would be fine with high-speed internet and cable TV, but as it turns out, that gets a bit much after 3 weeks. So I had to do something. Well, I've been a consultant for a long time. I was very fortunate when I started working in the late 90s, we'll just leave it there, that my second job was at a consulting firm. So I got a taste for it very early on, and I had a mentor and a friend who became my boss, and he demonstrated that being a consultant wasn't all that bad. So I always had that itch to scratch. So when I came to Canada, I figured that I could, well, the whole premise was that I could work anywhere with my Microsoft skill set. So I figured consulting was the best way to go. I've tried working full time for companies and it just doesn't work out because I get bored. So your question was what?
What has been the most interesting thing that you've learned? Or let me ask you a slightly different question. So you're saying that you're bored whenever you work for somebody else. Is this because you're a natural entrepreneur or you just don't like hierarchy?
Yes. To answer your question, yes, I get bored because I don't like hierarchy, because I find a lot of structures in corporations unnecessary because it's more of a barrier to getting things done than anything else. And yes, to the other side of it as well, because I get bored and I need to do something different every 3 months, 6 months. So that's why consulting is very suitable for keeping me interested in things and keeping me working, because otherwise I would sit at home and get bored that way and then do naughty things. Whereas with consulting, I get paid to do interesting things every 6 months.
Well, that makes sense. With technology, because it's always changing, it takes a long time to get bored, I assume.
Well, yes. And one of the most interesting things about consulting is that you have to keep learning. Thank you for bringing it back, Jason. You have to keep learning. You have to keep your skill set up, because what is true in 2005 is no longer true in 2015. And in fact, things I learned in 2012 with my training no longer holds true. With newer versions of software, because it's changing so rapidly. So the good thing there is that although you might be way behind the pack when you start out, every time Microsoft releases a new version of a product, you're at exactly the same level as everybody else, and everybody has to learn from scratch, which is a great thing about keeping your education current, because you may become an expert in the next 2 years about something that nobody else has even thought about. Hmm. And that's also very interesting. It's a nice thing, a nice side part of contracting that I like, that I get time to do things that I normally wouldn't be able to in a full-time environment.
That can make for a very interesting work environment, yeah. So with the technology change all the time, you've seen a lot of technology come and go. Is there anything from the past that you sometimes miss?
I pulled the ugliest face when you made that statement, because then I realized how old I was.
My apologies.
No, it's good to reflect and see how far you've come. The first computer I used was something my father brought home, which was an older but the same line as the Commodore 64. The chip inside, forgive me if I don't know the exact model number or whatever, but the chip inside was the one that was later used in the Commodore 64. And I missed that because it was so simple. I could plug in a cartridge that contained the basic programming language. I could plug in a cassette. Remember those, kids? Which contained some software that a friend of my father had written, and I could load it up and see how he had written software and learn from that. And this was in the early to mid-1980s. And what another thing I also miss is the Atari logo cartridge system we had at school, which was in the computer lab in fourth grade. And that's where I really got interested in, and realized that this is something that I knew and that I could do, and something that I was good at and that I enjoyed, apart from reading and writing. I can tell you that it started with 10. Rem, Randolph's first program. And line 50 was probably go to 10. It was probably a loop that I'd written, or in BASIC's case, a infinite loop. So, yeah.
What was the first program that you shared with the world?
Nothing that I wrote. A computer acquired a virus, and somebody asked for a copy of the game, and the game was infected with the virus, and I shared that game with a friend. So to answer your question in a technically correct term, my first program that I shared with somebody else was a computer virus, and I'm pretty sure it was stoned. Did you ever have stoned in North America?
I never had stoned, but it's interesting that you are admitting to software piracy.
I come from a country where morals about software were very loose. The moral compass is spinning all the time because of issues around exchange rate and so on. Software piracy is quite the norm. It's gotten better in the last few years, but software has always traditionally been quite expensive because of the exchange rate. And before that, when it was still artificially maintained by the government, we had all sorts of countries not wanting to give us stuff. So that was also another reason for piracy. A lot of games from BBSs were pirated. I remember playing, it was mostly games. I remember playing Leisure Suit Larry and infecting my father's computer. Sorry, Dad. All sorts of things like that. It was mostly pirated software, now that you mention it.
Well, I can hardly claim to be innocent because, yes, I think the first 10 years of my computing history was pretty much the same. You've told us a little bit about your first computers, but what really got you interested in technology in the first place? Was it just access to these devices?
I have always been interested in things that go ding. Anything that makes a noise, anything electronic, including clock radios. I had a toy pullback. You remember those pullback cars? You pull it back and it winds up the spring inside and then it zooms off.
I think everybody had one, yes.
Well, mine was a pullback Airwolf. Do you remember the helicopter show in the 1980s with Jan Michael Vincent, Airwolf? I had a pullback Airwolf, and one day it got stuck because I'd been playing with it outside, and I got some sand stuck in the cogs. And when my parents at the table fixed it, because I was mortified that it was broken, I watched him take this thing apart, and the clockwork inside was just phenomenal. I was fascinated by that. So I've always been fascinated in things that, mechanical things, I guess. And I was fascinated in chemistry when I got a chemistry set when I was younger. I was fascinated in electronics when I got an electronic set. Basically anything fascinating how things work. That's, I guess, the best way to do it. So constantly trying to learn more about how things go and how a little valve full of what looks like just normal air can make a computer work, because that's how it worked in those days. And how a television set works, and pulling things apart and being unable to fix them again in many, many, many cases. Sorry, Dad. So I guess the answer to your question is, I don't know, because it's always been there, the fascination with how things work. and it just happened to find a way into computers. I remember wanting to be an electronics engineer for a time. I wanted to be an electrical engineer. In fact, I enjoy doing electrical work around the house. I don't do it much here because of reasons that relate to requiring certificates and so on. But in South Africa, I was quite happy to wire new plugs and wall switches and lights and all sorts of things because it's very simple. So simple that I don't understand why more people are doing it. And I fully respect and understand how hard it is, but it doesn't mean that it's not easy to do.
So it sounds to me like you enjoy learning and you enjoy working with your hands.
Yes. However, it's been a lot more difficult in the last few years because my hands don't work as well as they used to, but we can talk about that another time.
Absolutely. Well, we're about to get to the next part because you are beginning to make the transition to a different kind of work, something that uses technology, but your role would not revolve around technology. You're moving more towards acting and directing. Before getting into that topic, though, I wonder, what would it take for you to stay in technology full time?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Because I would get bored. And I was bored. And when I wasn't working over the summer, I was quite happy to do something that wasn't technology. I love computers. I love Microsoft products, except Exchange and SharePoint. I love working on Macs. I love my iPhone. I love all of these things. I love the fact that my LG TV does Netflix and I don't have to worry about using a set-top box anymore. But I need a break. So to answer your question, nothing would keep me doing it full-time. I would go crazy.
Did your participation in the men's choir play a part in this change? Because that's very different from technology.
Yes, and I know I spoke about it last time and I was quite chuffed about it, and who wouldn't be? Because I was a stand-in for somebody who couldn't make it to Carnegie Hall. So why did you come along seeing as you booked your air ticket? It was completely unexpected. So it did play a role in rekindling my interest in the entertainment industry and the arts. But I think at the back of my mind, it's always been there because I got really back into acting in 2005. I had a friend of mine who was auditioning for a play and he said, you should come along. And I said, well, please, what do I know about acting? And then I got the lead. So not necessarily bragging, it's just that it was obviously something that I'd always been interested in, and possibly because of the way I was raised to do a job that is more sensible. I'm not saying that it's a wrong job, but it's not going to make a lot of money, that I decided to get into IT, because I tried journalism as well, for goodness sake. I thought I could be the next Kevin Carter or whatever the case may be and take pictures of war-torn zones and write about it. But I got bored in journalism too.
Are there any skills from any of your previous work, whether it's journalism or tech, that you can bring over to acting?
Yes. For one, all of my script learning and lines and stuff are done through the best technology apps, tools that I can find. So because I'm so comfortable with using electronic equipment and so on, I've found apps and tools that the people in the industry, they recommend certain tools and I become familiar with them quite easily and comfortably because I have the technical background. And in terms of shooting film, which I've done on my iPhone, because a camera is the only thing I couldn't borrow from somebody. So I was able to borrow lights, sound equipment, and all of that stuff. I just couldn't borrow a camera, so I had to use my iPhone. And because I understood how iPhones work with the wide-angle lens, I was able to take that knowledge and apply it to shooting a web series, which I'm in the midst of doing right now. So technology has been very useful in a general term. As far as journalism is concerned, yes, because I also watch a heck of a lot of movies, TV shows. I read a lot. I write a lot. You have to read to be able to write, and you have to write to be able to figure things out, I guess. When I write, I can process ideas that just can't get out of my head. And that, the journalism side, helped me distill my writing better. And that, in turn, has helped me write much better scripts and edit scripts so that they work better for a web series, for example, where somebody says 10 lines, you can distill that into one or two lines or even just a look. And it's because of the writing skills that I've acquired over the years and reading and watching films and watching TV that I've learned all of those things.
How will you measure success as an actor or director? Are you looking for a call from Hollywood or something else?
If I got a call from Hollywood, I would decline unless the money was really, really, really good. I can't remember who I said it to, but it was very recent about performance metrics in a context of my entertainment field. If I were to get recognition, I think I spoke about this in our last discussion on Discover ADN. I like to be recognized for entertaining people more than, let's say, an award or whatever, but I certainly wouldn't turn down an Oscar. That said, it would take a lot to get me to move from here because my husband and I chose to move to Calgary and we made it a joint decision, and everything that we decide that's big like that, we decide together. So to move him away from here would be a monumental task. Besides, we like it here. So I'm looking around for stuff that I can do in Calgary and possibly over a weekend or two in Vancouver, possibly a week or two in the US if I ever do become a Canadian citizen. So to answer your question, it would take a lot to get me to move from here because I like it here.
Well, that kind of plays into the next question, because Canada really has only two major cities where actors congregate in hopes of getting noticed. You don't live in either of them. So what kind of challenges are you going to face being based in Calgary, trying to become an actor?
Well, the answer to that question is a statement that I'm very bad at growing facial hair. And the problem that I'm getting to there is that a lot of the stuff that does come out to Alberta is the Westerns. So Leonardo DiCaprio's latest Western movie was shot here. And there's a lot of Fargo and a couple of other shows, one which I've been cast as a dead body in, which I can't talk about right now. But it's all Western-based stuff. So I have very limited options in that respect. So by necessity, because I'm not in Vancouver or Toronto, I've had to appreciate that limitation. And with my co-producer, co-director, co-everything, my partner in crime, with whom I have a very small production company, it's just the two of us, we've decided to create our own content. And that was the premise behind the web series. She had an idea and I said, well, I want to shoot something. Let's do something. It was literally a Facebook post, and we'll talk about Facebook later, a Facebook post that says, I've got time this summer. I didn't get cast in a play. Let's do something. And she responded, and that's how it started. Producing your own content gives you also the ability to see it through to the end. And if anything goes wrong with it, you yourself are responsible for it. You can't blame somebody who didn't give you enough money. You can't blame somebody who decided to change that scene or the storyline or whatever. It's your baby. So if it's a success, hooray. If it's not a success, you learn from that. And it's all your responsibility, which is another thing that I like.
So what are your main concerns going down this route? Because from what I understand, you're not going to stop consulting anytime soon. That's going to be available for a little while. But do you have any concerns as you transition towards entertainment?
This is a discussion I've been having with myself for the last 2 weeks. I was in Seattle at the end of October for the biggest Microsoft SQL Server conference in the world called the PASS Summit. PASS stands for Professional Association of SQL Server. And I really, really enjoy that community. I enjoy being a part of it. I enjoy learning from my peers. I enjoy giving back to the community as well. So I don't see that falling away simply because of what it's enabled me to do and the people it's allowed me to meet and so on and interact with. At the same time, as I said, I get bored. I'll get bored if I work full time in technology. I will also get bored if I work full time in the entertainment industry. And just like a full time job, you will have politics that you have to deal with. You will have issues that are really, really tedious. You have to wait around a lot. For example, today I did a shoot for two commercials, and I assisted in the third. I got there at 9 o'clock and I left at 4. That is a good day. That is a really good day that we were able to shoot 3 commercials in one day. Normally it's 1 or 2. So there is a lot of waiting around, and it's by necessity. You have to set up the shots, you have to move the camera, you have to test the sound, you have to make sure the lighting is right, and a whole bunch of things that have to happen, which is why, again, being your own producer of content means that you get to see that side of it. You see everything behind the camera. You have to interact with locations. You have to interact with sound people, with lighting people, with fussy directors, which is why I'm directing, because I'm the fussiest person I know. And dealing with writers and all sorts of things that you don't think about when you see Hollywood, when you see the Oscars, and you skip past on your DVR all of the awards that don't mean best actual best film. There's a lot of challenges with the entertainment industry as well as IT or whatever else I would be working. So I like to have that balance where I can say, I'm bored with this, let me go and do that now. So consulting's not going away. I might minimize it for a period of 3 months and then do acting or directing or writing. But then after 3 months, I'll get bored of that and go back to consulting. I don't know if that answers your question.
It does a little bit. What do you find more rewarding, acting or directing?
Teaching. I may have brought it up in our last interview. I was a school teacher very briefly in my career. In 2005, I was a computer literacy teacher, and almost the same feeling of satisfaction from my job as an entertainer I got from teaching. So first is teaching, second is entertainment, third is figuring something out on SQL Server. Does that answer your question?
That does answer the question, and it's very interesting that you gave an option C when there was no option.
Well, this is the thing about South Africans. We're shady. You have to watch out.
It's all good. That being said, you've been talking about some of the projects that you're working on. Do you have any upcoming productions that people might be able to see today or in the coming weeks?
The first thing I ever did on film was in Canada, there are videos of me. Well, no, that's not true either. Well, let me settle. The first thing I did in Calgary, that's easier, was a 48-hour film festival in April. And the competition was that we had to write a 5-minute or less movie, write it, produce it, edit, all of that stuff within a 48-hour period. So as you can imagine, the quality is not where you would like it to be, specifically with editing, because there's not a lot of time and you don't have enough time to shoot enough coverage. So there's a lot of challenges. Given that, yes, and I can give you a link in the show notes to the first thing that I did in Calgary. And my big line, I'm not even on camera because of editing reasons. Nobody could keep continuity. So I give my best line, which is, this is the worst cult ever, off camera. But that was my debut and it is available. I'll put it in the show notes. The other thing that I worked on is called Imitative Magic. That's a film that was produced and written and directed in Calgary as well by Blaise Kolodichuk, who is a longtime indie filmmaker and loves low-budget horror movies. In fact, he's made, I'm not exaggerating when I say 20 or 30 films in the genre. But because he loves them so much, while they are cheesy and have terrible lines, they're very funny and they pull you in, kind of like the killer in the last one that I was in. So that is also available on DVD. It's not for free. You have to pay for it. And it would be nice if you did. I can give you a link to his production company if you want to check that out. There are trailers online for that. And then the thing that I've been building with my partner Anna May, not the animated creatures that you see on Japanese TV. There's two separate names there, Anna May. Her last name is Alexander. She and I are producing a web series on the topic of feminism, but we're trying to put an amusing twist on it so that it isn't, there's no bad ending. The woman always gets the upper hand at the end, so it's a good, happy ending. That's called You Asked For It, and we're in the middle of production at the moment. Whenever we get a weekend, we try and do an episode, and we've got 10 written. We've done 4 filmed, and 3 have been rough cut already. So all we have to do is music and sound mixing so that the levels are correct and so on. So that is still ongoing. Then I did another one last month called The Winner, which was originally going to be a short film, but the producers have decided to make it into a miniseries of some sort. That is currently in sound editing phase. In fact, we're sending emails back and forth with the sound studio now to get the mix together, and then that will go out before the end of the year. I don't have a link for that because it doesn't exist yet, so I can tell you about that or tell people about it on app.net and Twitter and Facebook and whichever other social network I select myself out on when it happens, but it'll be soon. It'll be in the next 2 weeks or so. And then I'm going to be a dead body in a show that's coming up soon. And all you'll see is 10 seconds or less of me on a slab, and somebody's going to open a body bag and say, yes, it's him, and then cry. So that's what I have planned, and then next year we'll see what happens.
What sort of advice would you give people who also want to get into acting themselves?
Don't.
You don't want the competition?
No, it's not about that at all. It's do it if you love it. It's like teaching. There is absolutely no reward apart from self-satisfaction, if I can put it that way. I've met some very hardworking, very talented people who, in my opinion, are darn sight better than Hollywood actors. And given the right vehicle, whether it be a film or a TV show or a web series or whatever, would be very successful. It's just that they're in the wrong place. They're not in Hollywood. And even that said, there are hundreds, I'm not exaggerating either, hundreds of thousands of actors in Hollywood trying to find work and are doing something else instead. It is a soul-crushing industry, and you should only do it if you really, really, really love it. And I really, really, really love it. So my advice would be think twice. If you want to do it for fame and glory, you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
Well, on that note, how can people help you if they wanted to?
In what respect? I mean, supporting my very pitiful attempts at entertainment?
Absolutely. Supporting your acting or directing, of
course. Directoring.
Directoring, yeah. Of course, people can share links to your work on various social sites and whatnot, but is there anything else that you sometimes need, whether it's audio engineers or equipment or skill or anything of that sort that you might sometimes need to crowdsource?
We're actually having this conversation now about the winner that I was just talking about, finding ways to market it without being egregiously in your face and social networky about it, because there's currently a thing, which is the technical term. There is a cable company in Canada that is sponsoring you to pitch a video or a web series or a TV show, and they will give you money if you can get enough votes on Facebook or Twitter or whatever the heck it is, which to me defeats the entire object of making something. You want to make something because you want to make something that you believe in or that you care about, and you want to share it with the world. You don't want to win a popularity contest. It's not about that. So coming back to your question, I saw and shared a video of El Mariachi, The Making Of, where I'm just a little distracted now because I'm looking for the link now, which I can share with you. It's a 10-minute video by the director of how he made the film. And because he didn't have money, he shot it for a budget of $7,000 US, not Canadian. So that's like 50,000 Canadians. He shot it in a very short amount of time, and he shot it in sequence so that if somebody made a mistake in the first take, they carried on going and just edited it so that you wouldn't even notice. And that's the great thing about film, is that you can edit the best parts together. Nobody has to know. And if you change your camera angle or whatever just to get a better shot, nobody has to know that there were 2 or 3 hours in between those shots. So where I'm getting to there is that out of necessity of having to do everything yourself, sometimes you get a better product. So I would say if you do want to help with audio engineering, that would be grand. But that's right at the end of the project. During the project, you generally want to do it yourself, I guess. Not for selfish reasons, but because it's a learning experience. If you want to get involved, then sure, that would be nice. But it's difficult to work with people that you haven't worked with before because you don't know what kind of people they're like, how they work, whether you can work with them in stressful situations at 3 a.m. after you've been doing a 17-hour shoot. It's a very difficult question to answer from that point of view. It would be cool if you shared my links and got the thing out there on social media and told your friends and dress up and throw rice and wear newspaper hats and so on, like Rocky Horror. But I'm not asking for that. I'm just asking for people to enjoy what I make. I'll share the link to El Mariachi's The Making Of video. It's a 10-minute piece, and Robert Rodriguez talks through how he did certain shots, and out of necessity, because he didn't have the budget, he didn't have the personnel, he would use water pistols for guns, just painted black. And he was so cheap in one particular scene that he reused props, but because of the way that he cut them, you would never tell that they were reused. So out of necessity, he made a better product than he would have with $200,000 and investors saying, why isn't our film done yet? And I don't like that edit, so we're going to do our own edit and it's going to fail like Brazil did. So if people want to help, the best way to help is to talk about the product once it's finished.
Well, that sounds pretty good. And I like it when people, regardless of whether they're directors or coders or mechanics, it doesn't matter. I really like it when people are reusing things rather than just buying new and then discarding it later.
Oh, definitely. And one thing that you mentioned, you talked about mechanics and so on. What we do need is actors, extras. If people want to do that for, we spent 5 hours the other day doing a 2-minute web series episode.
You just told everyone not to do this.
If they want to be an extra, that's different. But I must warn you, extras don't get paid. Generally, they don't get credits. And their name generally doesn't even get into the making of. But what we do need is people to hang around pretending to be normal people, right? So let's, for example, take a scene where you're doing a restaurant and you've got the main action happening at a table where, let's say, the scene is a man is about to propose to his fiance or his girlfriend, who will then become his fiance if she says yes. And you've got people in the background. Those are called background. They're actually called background. They're specially trained to be normal people. And the reason I say that is because human beings, and I'm including myself in this, I had to learn how not to do this. When there's a camera in the room, they will look at the camera. So background people are trained to not look at the camera and not mug and not steal the scene. Because when you're in a restaurant doing your proposal scene, you don't want the person in the background stealing the scene from you. You don't want him to keep looking at the camera because you're wasting time, you're wasting money, you're wasting a whole bunch of resources instead of just getting the shot. So yes, we need people, but you have to be dedicated. And you have to sit around for hours and hours and hours until, like me, I forgot to say take 5 so that people got to use the washroom. It's terrible, I know, but people sit around for hours and hours and hours doing nothing. If that's what you want to do, sure, come and help. But bear in mind, it does get very, very boring. Unless you're the director.
And that's what you get to be.
Sometimes, yes.
All right. Well, on that note, how can people get in touch with you if they have any questions or if they do want to be part of your productions?
Firstly, it would help a great deal if you were in Calgary. Now, I'm not sure how many listeners you have in Calgary apart from me.
I think you're the only one, yes.
If they're in Calgary and we're shooting something and chances are good that we will sooner than later because you get an itch that you need to scratch, then they can contact me on my website, which I'll give you for the show notes. It's randolphwest.ca. Really boring. And if you want to ask me questions about the industry, I consider myself a rank amateur, so the chances are good that I won't know, and I'll point you to a website to tell you how to do it, because everything I know, I've taught myself. As I mentioned, I had to borrow equipment, I had to borrow lights and recording equipment and so on. But the only thing I've done myself is shooting on my iPhone. So I can tell you about that. But at the same time, there are some people much smarter than me who can tell you how to set up a wide-angle lens and so on. And they'll be the first people to tell you not to shoot anything on an iPhone for professional purposes. Because what I learned and what I understood is that if you can do it with yourself at home. If you are recording a video and you move the phone to the left or to the right at any sort of speed, it blurs. So you'll lose the shot that you're trying to get. So all of the stuff I'm doing, for example, is on a tripod. So I have to spend a lot of time setting up my shots. And in my last web series episode, we had, out of that 2 minutes of usable footage, we had 18 shots and I still missed one. So that means checking the lights, checking the sound, and moving the camera and the lights every time that we want to change the placement of everything just to get that shot. And the actors have to do exactly the same thing every time because of continuity reasons and so on. I can tell you about that. And I will be happy to share that information. But most of it is sitting around and waiting.
All right. So if people want to get in touch, they can sit around and wait. I gotcha. All
right. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on app.net, and you can find me on Facebook. I have a public profile for Facebook, so I'll share stuff and you can follow me on there. If I don't add you as a friend, don't take it personally. I hate Facebook. I hate it with a passion. If you listen to that other podcast I've done, I play devil's advocate about it, but I'm not a fan of Facebook because of the privacy rules.
Well, the privacy rules are very easy on Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg has the privacy, you don't.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So I use Facebook. Oh, this is what I wanted to mention earlier. I use Facebook because that's where everybody is. If I didn't have to use Facebook, I wouldn't. But as it turns out, I was able to get 4 of the last 4 things that I made because of Facebook.
So it's not all bad.
It's not all bad. You just have to use it the right way. I said something similar the other day on some social network, where I think of Facebook as my own alternate reality. So I'll say things on there that are not necessarily true just to invoke a response in some people. And then I'll delete it as if nothing happened, because I like watching people get riled up over silly things.
Ah, yes. We have names for people like you. Troll. Shit disturber.
Shit stirrer. Yes, I am. And I own it and I enjoy it. And the thing is, watching how people react, you can always learn new things and create new characters around them. So as a writer, you can say, well, that's an interesting perspective. I never would have thought about that myself. So I'm going to incorporate that into something that I'm writing. It may just be a mannerism. It may be a word choice. It may be anything like that. And you can base an entire character off that. In fact, I think that's how American politics works right now. Somebody takes a position and then defends it till the end, and they may not necessarily believe that position. I took a position of devil's advocate about how social networks are wonderful on that last podcast we did with Aiden, because I wanted to for fun, but I'm sure politics is exactly the same thing.
So it's all a popularity contest, and I'll say anything to be popular.
Well, that's what the internet has brought us. It has democratized idiocy and popularity. So everybody can get their 15 minutes of fame, or in this case, 15 seconds of fame. And you will hear a lot of you will see a lot of hand-wringing about this sort of thing, because this is not the way it should be, and people are better than this, but they're not. Humans are very basic animals, and we like to be appreciated and acknowledged, generally speaking. And it's a personality flaw, in my case, that allows me to be an actor and have no shame and do almost anything on camera because I want approval. I'll be the first to admit that, because that's the kind of personality you need to do this. You have to have a thick skin and be prepared to do almost anything because you love it that much.
Well, I would like to say that I do appreciate the fact that you've come onto the show for the second time.
You dragged me back kicking and screaming. Could you hear it in my voice?
A little bit, but it's all good. I will edit that out in post. All right. Well, I'd like to thank you for joining me today. And for our listeners, all of the links that Randolph has promised will be found in the show notes. And I do really recommend clicking on some of those links, finding out some of what he can do. And please, please, please buy some DVDs.
Yes, I'm going to. That's Imitative Magic, directed by Blaise Koledichek.
Well, while you look for that, I will get the outro music going. And for our listeners, our next episode will probably be in another week or two. There's no schedule at this point in time. But if you have any questions, comments, feedback, concern, get in touch with either Randolph or myself on app.net, Twitter, or anywhere else you might find us.
You almost said Radbrist, didn't you?
I almost said Radbrist.
Yes, I still don't know why I thought that was a good idea.
Either way, it is memorable. You're the only one I know.
Thanks, Mom and Dad.
All right, and thank you all for listening.
Thanks for having me.